Have you ever really stopped to think about the invisible matrix that keeps your entire digital life running?
Oh, most people definitely don't.
Right. We just, tap our screens, we boot up our consoles, and we completely expect the magic to just happen.
You just expect the server to be there.
Exactly. But who actually pays for all of this when the bill comes due? And what happens when the hidden infrastructure holding it all together starts to fracture?
That's the real question, yeah.
So today we're taking a deep dive into this sprawling intelligence drop from Tuki Morning. It's dated today, March 31st, 2026. And our mission is to figure out exactly who is footing that bill.
And, the sources we're pulling from today, they go way beyond just a simple daily news update.
Oh yeah, it's a lot of data.
It really is. We're synthesizing independent testing data. We've got industry reports from IDC and Counterpoint Research.
And official corporate announcements too, right?
Right. And if we step back and look at the thematic through line connecting all these disparate data points, we're basically witnessing a brutal foundational economic restructuring of the entire tech world.
Which sounds intense because it is.
It is. We're going to trace the money today, from the physical fiber optic wires and geopolitical sanctions straight through to, well, the staggering price of gaming hardware.
And algorithms replacing human labor.
Yeah, and ultimately the shocking collapse of a 150 million user digital empire.
Okay, so let's unpack this. And I feel like we have to start with a rather unusual commander's log from the Tech and Morning team themselves.
Yeah, the opening to their newsletter today was definitely not business as usual.
Not at all. They actually opened by apologizing to their 235 concurrent online users for a delayed release. And the reason? They were actively combating extreme local internet throttling and censorship.
Which was compounded by harsh international tech sanctions globally.
Right. They even put out a specific public plea to giants like Google to support free access to technology.
And before we dive into the actual mechanics of this situation, I think we need a quick but really important note here.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, this report touches heavily on global geopolitics, state-level censorship, and international sanctions. And we are here to impartially break down the business and economic impacts outlined to these sources.
Exactly. We are not here to endorse any specific political viewpoints or take sides on this.
Right. Our goal is strictly to understand how these global moves fundamentally alter the technology you use every day.
We're just following the money. And, looking at what happened to Tech in Morning, it feels like the internet used to be this open, boundless, global highway system.
Yeah, the classic information superhighway.
Right. But now it's like some countries are just dropping these massive, impenetrable concrete barriers straight into the middle of the road.
That's a strong visual. But let's actually examine how that concrete barrier functions technically. Yeah.
Okay, lay it on me.
Well, internet throttling and censorship at a state level isn't just some official flipping a master switch in a control room.
It's not the big red button.
No, unfortunately not. It usually involves manipulating the Border Gateway Protocol, or BGP, which is essentially the postal sorting system of the internet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so state actors force internet service providers to deliberately drop data packets or, route them into digital dead ends.
Right. So the mail just never arrives.
Exactly. And you combine that with international tech sanctions, where hardware manufacturers are legally barred from selling routing equipment or cloud infrastructure to certain regions.
And you get the exact friction Tech and Morning experienced. Entire regions of the globe are just being systematically walled off.
Which forces the major global players to completely rethink their infrastructure.
Right. They have to build their own exclusive multi-billion dollar toll roads to bypass the congested traffic entirely. And we're seeing that pivot happen right now, right here in the US.
Yes, the Foxconn news.
Exactly. Hon Precision Industry, which, most people just know as Foxconn, they just greenlit a $295 million capital injection into their Texas subsidiary.
That's a massive amount of capital.
It's huge. And their singular directive is to expand high-end AI server manufacturing on United States soil. And concurrently, the US is aggressively hoarding NVIDIA's Blackwell architecture to build out these regional data clusters.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is a direct geopolitical firewall tactic.
How so?
Well, for decades, the global tech industry has been heavily reliant on Taiwan and mainland China for crucial silicon manufacturing and assembly.
Right, that's just been the default.
Exactly. But by pulling that manufacturing directly to Texas, and hoarding the cutting-edge Blackwell architecture, the U.S. is hyper-accelerating its domestic infrastructure.
Well, they're insulating themselves.
Yes, deliberately insulating themselves from the exact global supply chain disruptions that, you know, delayed the newsletter today.
Wait, I have to stop you there and challenge the premise of this report for a second.
Okay, sure.
Because pulling manufacturing to Texas will eventually lower cloud costs. I mean, how does that math actually work?
It sounds totally backwards, right?
It really does. U.S. labor and commercial real estate are notoriously more expensive than overseas operations. You just mentioned a nearly $300 million investment just to expand the footprint.
Yep, $295 million.
Right. So how does a substantially more expensive factory lead to cheaper cloud computing for the person listening to this right now?
It's a great question, because on the surface, the economics seem entirely counterintuitive. But you have to look at what they're actually building in Texas.
Okay, what are they building?
We aren't talking about rows of human assembly lines putting together consumer smartphones. We are talking about highly automated robotic facilities churning out dense AI servers.
Ah, so taking the human labor cost out of the equation.
Mostly, yeah. The upfront capital cost is astronomical, yes. But by building the servers right next to the sprawling data centers in Texas, they completely bypass international shipping logistics.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they avoid heavy import tariffs and the persistent risk of cargo ships being delayed by global conflicts.
So they're basically swallowing the massive upfront cost to just eliminate the friction of transit entirely.
Precisely. Furthermore, NVIDIA's Blackwell architecture isn't just, like, faster in a traditional sense. Mm-hmm. It's fundamentally redesigned for extreme power efficiency.
Right, it runs cooler or uses less juice.
Exactly. It handles complex AI calculations using a fraction of the electricity that previous generations required.
Yeah.
And because the scale-up of this domestic infrastructure is so vast, IDC analysts are projecting something wild.
What's the projection?
They project it could actually reduce global cloud computing costs by 25% within just 9 months.
Wait, really? 25%?
Yep. The sheer volume of automated processing power coming online creates this localized economy of scale that ultimately drives down the end user price.
I mean, a 25% drop in cloud costs in less than a year is profound, but, and here is the catch building, that domestic infrastructure to lower cloud costs will take months, if not years, to fully realize those savings.
Absolutely. It's not an overnight fix.
Right. And meanwhile, these technology companies have to pay the skyrocketing costs of running their current operations right now. And today, we saw exactly how they plan to survive that immediate financial squeeze.
Oh, yeah, we definitely did.
They are passing the bill directly to you, the consumer.
Which brings us perfectly to the volatile consumer hardware market. Because while corporate cloud costs might drop eventually, the current global economic pressure is acting like a vice grip on consumer electronics.
A vice grip is an understatement. Sony officially dropped a bombshell globally today. Starting April 2, they are implementing severe price hikes across the entire PlayStation 5 lineup.
The whole lineup, yeah.
And the crown jewel of this price hike. The PlayStation 5 Pro is jumping to an elite $899.99 in the U.S.
It's just staggering. Almost $1,000 for a mid-generation console refresh.
It's unheard of.
Sony is citing persistent inflation and severe ongoing memory chip shortages as the main drivers behind this continued pressure in the global economic landscape.
But the strategy goes far beyond just the plastic and silicon in the physical box, right? The TIG Morning Report also highlights that dynamic A/B pricing structures are actively appearing on the digital PlayStation store.
Yes, to maximize software margins. And what's truly fascinating here is the underlying mechanism of that A/B pricing strategy.
How does it actually work? Because it sounds kind of dystopian.
It kind of is. This isn't just a flat, visible price increase where a game goes from $70 to $80 for everyone. An AI-driven algorithm essentially tests two different prices simultaneously on different groups of users.
Wait, so I might see a different price than you.
Exactly. It tracks how you scroll, what genres you click on, and how long your cursor hovers over a buy button.
Oh, wow. It's monitoring hesitation.
It is. It's searching for the absolute psychological ceiling of what a consumer will tolerate before they just abandon the shopping cart. Sony is utilizing algorithmic data to extract the maximum possible dollar amount from every individual transaction.
I mean, I completely understand the technical marvel of an algorithm that can do that in real time, but I really have to push back on the business strategy here.
You don't think it'll work?
Is a $900 price tag for hardware combined with algorithmic pricing on digital games actually sustainable? Look at it from the perspective of the consumer listening right now.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
It feels like buying a luxury sports car, putting down a staggering down payment, and then getting charged a fluctuating algorithm-determined price just to turn on the radio or roll down the windows.
That's a great analogy, actually.
At some point, the consumer just walks away, right? It really feels like Sony is handing Microsoft a golden opportunity to step in as the budget-friendly alternative.
It is a tremendously high-risk gamble. Right. Sony is basically abandoning the traditional industry strategy of making hardware broadly accessible at a slight loss.
Which was always the playbook to build the largest possible install base.
Right. But instead, they're retreating behind an elite paywall. They know the memory chip shortages are real, and they are actively choosing to protect their profit margins by squeezing their most hardcore, dedicated audience.
And that ruthless economic squeeze dictates everything else in the industry. Because if companies are deploying AI algorithms to maximize the price you pay on the storefront,
they're simultaneously desperate to use AI to minimize what they pay to create the product in the first place.
Exactly. Which brings us to a section of the report that really highlights the human cost of this matrix. We are seeing a silent labor revolution happening in game development today.
The localization news.
Yeah, real reports just emerged that Warhorse Studios, the developers behind the highly anticipated historical epic Kingdom Come, Deliverance 2, have allegedly fired human translation staff.
And replaced them with generative AI.
Yes, they are replacing them with generative AI engines to handle the localization of the game's intricate medieval dialogue.
And the stated reason for this shift, purely to save finances.
Just slashing budgets. And the report also notes that Owlcat Games is heavily relying on generative AI for similar tasks.
This perfectly illustrates what industry analysts are calling the quality illusion.
The quality illusion? What's that?
Well, on a financial spreadsheet, the logic seems impeccable to an executive trying to trim ballooning development budgets. Generative AI can produce translated text at a fraction of the cost and 100 times the speed of a human localization team.
Which sounds great on paper.
Right. For a sweeping historical RPG containing millions of lines of branching dialogue, the financial savings are immense. But localizing a complex narrative isn't just about direct word-for-word translation.
Right. You can't just run 15th century Bohemian slang through a basic language processor and expect it to make contextual sense in colloquial English or Japanese.
Exactly. And this is where the underlying mechanism of generative AI becomes a massive liability for the art form.
Because it doesn't actually understand the context.
Right. Neural networks function predictively. They analyze vast amounts of data to determine the most statistically likely next word in a sequence.
Okay, so it's basically highly advanced autocomplete.
Yes. But think about how human humor works. Especially dark humor, which is an absolute staple of these gritty medieval RPGs. Humor relies entirely on the unexpected word.
It relies on a sharp left turn.
Yes, it relies on the punchline.
Oh, wow. So because an AI naturally favors statistical probability, it basically views a punchline as a mathematical anomaly.
Exactly.
It literally irons out the joke because it's trying to make the sentence more predictable and safe.
That is precisely what happens. The AI mathematically strips away the nuance, the idiomatic expressions, and the deep cultural context.
That's depressing.
It produces text that has technically flawless grammar in 12 different languages, but feels completely robotic and lifeless to the player reading it.
Which means we might be heading for a wave of premium games that technically function globally, but have completely lost their human soul.
And the upcoming reviews for these titles are going to be fascinating to watch.
We're going to see firsthand if consumers punish companies for sacrificing the soul of their art just to pad their quarterly profit margins.
Yeah, and that underlying tension between preserving a game's soul and surviving the harsh economic reality of the industry brings us to perhaps the most sobering news in today's deep dive.
Yeah, this next part is rough.
We've talked about companies cutting human jobs because the sheer overhead of running these digital ecosystems is crushing them. But what happens when even ruthless AI cost-cutting isn't enough to save the platform?
Yeah, this one truly hurts to read. Rec Room, which is essentially the pioneer of social VR and community game creation, announced it is permanently shutting down its servers on June 1st, 2026.
Such a massive loss for the community.
Yeah, it is. This isn't some niche indie project that failed to find an audience. This is a foundational platform that accumulated over 150 million registered players over the past decade.
150 million users. I mean, to truly contextualize that number, it is roughly equivalent to the entire population of Japan, all logging into one digital ecosystem.
And yet, despite that staggering reach, the studio stated they could no longer find a viable path to sustainable profitability.
It's hard to wrap your head around.
How does that even happen? Seriously, how do you have a user base the size of a major sovereign nation and still go completely broke?
Well, think of a live service game, like an incredibly lavish luxury hotel where all the rooms are completely free for anyone to stay in.
Okay, I'm tracking.
The hotel attempts to survive and pay its staff entirely by selling expensive cocktails in the lobby. If you have 150 million people sleeping in the rooms, using the hot water, and running up the electricity bill.
But only 1% of them are actually buying drinks.
Exactly. The building is going to go bankrupt no matter how popular and crowded it is. The traditional free-to-play model relies on selling cosmetic skins and battle passes to offset server costs. But that model simply collapsed under its own weight here.
Because the physical infrastructure costs we talked about in the first segment are just too high.
Exactly. Managing global 3D cloud servers to host millions of concurrent players, players who are interacting in real-time physics environments, requires an astronomical amount of bandwidth and processing power.
Because it's VR, right?
Yeah. You have to synchronize the hand movements of a VR player in Tokyo with a player in London in milliseconds, continuously, without lag.
Plus the moderation costs.
Add to that the necessary cost of live human moderation to keep the community safe, and the demand for constant, massive content updates to prevent player churn.
It's just a bottomless money pit.
The immense overhead completely burned through all the revenue they were making from selling $5 digital hats.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? I want you to imagine your entire digital library, the spaces you've meticulously built, the items you've collected over a decade, the friendships tied to a specific virtual room just vanishing overnight.
Because on June 1st, that's exactly what happens.
Millions of players are going to see their digital creations evaporate into thin air. If a platform with 150 million users cannot keep the servers powered on, the traditional live service model is fundamentally broken.
It's a huge wake-up call.
It raises some incredibly chilling questions about the illusion of digital ownership. You don't own those cosmetic skins. You are just temporarily renting server space until the parent company can no longer afford the electricity bill.
It is a stark market correction.
Yeah.
It forces us to confront the reality that the cloud is really just someone else's computer. And when their business model fails, your digital life disappears with it.
It really does. But, you know, I want to pivot here because it is important to note that it's not all doom and gloom in the industry today.
Good. Let's talk about the survivors.
Right. While Sony is pushing an elite $900 K-wall and Rec Room is buckling under server costs, other giants are reading the room. They are actively pivoting their strategies to focus on survival through value retention.
Microsoft and Nintendo.
Yep. They made some very calculated moves today that feel like direct strategic responses to this exact economic pressure.
Let's look at Microsoft first. They deployed a completely rewritten Xbox Insider dashboard today. And the standout feature is that they finally granted players a manual toggle for the highly controversial Quick Resume feature.
Which, you know, sounds like a minor settings update to a casual observer, but it's actually a huge deal for anyone who plays multiplayer games.
It is a crucial architectural fix. The underlying technology of Quick Resume was impressive. It basically dumps the active memory state of a game directly onto the hard drive so you can instantly boot it back up right where you left off days later.
Which is great for single-player games.
Sure, but the mechanism fundamentally conflicted with live service architecture.
Because of the server connection.
Right. The game would boot up from the hard drive and try to seamlessly reconnect to multiplayer servers using a digital handshake that had timed out hours or even days ago.
And that caused endless crashes, desyncs, and just ruined multiplayer lobbies.
Exactly. By letting players manually turn it off on a per-game basis, Microsoft is actively resolving a major point of user friction.
They are actually listening to what annoys the player and fixing it. They also expanded the group limits on the home screen and added custom UI colors, giving players granular control over their own ecosystem.
Which builds goodwill.
Oh, and Super Meat Boy 3D dropped on their platform today as well.
It is a clear strategy of refinement and retention rather than pure financial extraction.
Right. And meanwhile, over at Nintendo, they dropped version 1.6.0 for Mario Kart World.
A huge update.
Massive. They introduced the legendary Ba-Bomb Blast battle mode entirely for free, alongside a sweeping item rebalance. They even added Animal Crossing, New Horizons music, to their Nintendo Music app.
And the timing of this is what's really key.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Look at Nintendo's masterstroke of timing here.
He has a masterclass in platform management. We all know the Switch 2 is imminent.
Exactly. The traditional console playbook dictates that when a new machine is on the horizon, you just let the old console quietly fade into the sunset.
You hold everything back.
Right. You hoard all your best ideas, your new modes, and your updates for the launch window of the new hardware to aggressively drive early sales. But instead, Nintendo is dropping major, highly requested free content updates right now.
This raises an important question about how a company maintains a subscriber base in a volatile, inflation-heavy market.
What's their end goal here?
Nintendo is choosing to actively cannibalize the quiet twilight period of their current console to ensure maximum active engagement right up to the exact second the Switch 2 is officially announced.
Because an engaged player who is actively having fun in your ecosystem on a Tuesday is far more likely to buy your new console on a Wednesday.
Precisely. What Microsoft and Nintendo are executing here is a textbook play for software optimization and value retention.
They're playing the long game.
They aren't trying to squeeze blood from their hardcore base with $900 hardware refreshes. They are fixing the underlying network crashes, providing free game modes, and building an impenetrable shield of brand loyalty.
They are making it as difficult as possible for a player to justify leaving their ecosystem.
Exactly.
It is a total divergence in industry strategy. It's essentially saying, we know things are incredibly expensive right now, so we are going to make the box you already own better for free.
Which is a very smart move right now.
Which brings us full circle to the core thesis of today's Taken Morning Deep Dive. We are living through an incredibly manic era of technological and economic restructuring.
The landscape is shifting fast.
On one end, we have geopolitical firewalls, BGP routing manipulation, and state-sanctioned server hoarding. On the other end, we have $900 console price hikes, the evaporation of 150 million user VR world, and AI algorithms quietly stripping the jokes out of medieval RPGs to save a few dollars.
And the common denominator across all of these completely disparate events is the rapidly rising cost of digital existence.
The bill is coming due.
It is. But the core advice from the Taken Game team provides the perfect roadmap for you as you navigate this landscape. Consume consciously and do not react emotionally.
Hardware cycles will always shift. Platforms that feel permanent, like a luxury hotel with free rooms, will inevitably close their doors if the math doesn't work.
They always do.
But staying informed is your best defense. Understanding the mechanisms like why an automated Texas AI factory eventually lowers your cloud bill, or how predictive text mathematically ruins localized dialogue makes you bulletproof against corporate gouging.
When you understand the underlying physics of the industry, you can step back from the hype and make entirely rational decisions about where you invest your finite time and your hard-earned money.
Absolutely. All right, before we let you go, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over.
Oh, this is a good one.
We talked today about Sony deploying complex AI algorithms to dynamically test and adjust the price of games on their digital storefront, right? Endlessly searching for the maximum amount you are willing to pay.
Right, the A/B testing.
And we also talked about studios using generative AI to write the actual dialogue and narrative inside the games themselves.
To cut human costs.
Exactly. So if you connect those two evolving technologies, how long until we reach a point where an AI is generating an entire custom video game for you on the fly and pricing that unique experience dynamically based on the exact amount of money its algorithms know you currently have in your bank account?
The underlying technology to achieve that is, well, it's closer than most people realize. It is a deeply unsettling yet entirely plausible future to consider.
Something to think about the next time you boot up your console. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll catch you next time.